Hello, and welcome back to True Crime Cat Lawyer and our coverage of the trial in Manny Ellis's death. When we last left off, the prosecution had rested its case and the judge denied all three officers' motions to dismiss the cases against them. The week of November 13th was the start of the defense's cases. First up was the opening statement of Officer Collins. You may recall that Collins' attorneys deferred their opening statement until the state rested its case. Collins' opening statement claimed that the prosecution cherry-picked only the favorable witnesses to present to the jury. Collins' attorney also referenced both the 2015 and 2019 incidents that Manny had with police. During his opening statement, Collins' attorney said that Manny, quote-unquote, had no quit in him about 10 to 15 times when referring to both the 2015 and 2019 incidents, as well as the night that Manny died. He alleged that those past incidents showed how Manny responds to law enforcement and showed how Manny was affected by his use of meth. Collins' attorney then went into Collins' military record, his educational background, etc. According to Collins' attorney, Collins didn't have any quote-unquote blemishes on his record during his time with Tacoma PD, and he received the Medal of Merit along with 8 other commendations. Essentially, Collins' attorney was presenting any facts he could to humanize his client and make him look good. Collins' attorney told the jury that his client will testify as part of their case. In fact, all three defendants are expected to testify before the defense rests their cases. The first witness called by Defendant Rankin was Byron Jones. Jones was a shift manager at the A&W back in 2019 when Manny attempted to rob the restaurant while high on meth. Jones spent less than 5 minutes on the stand for both direct and cross-examination. The next witness, also involved in the 2019 incident with Manny, was Pierce County Sheriff's Deputy Aaron Wolf. On direct examination, Wolf described how he found Manny when he arrived on scene. He said Manny was, quote, panting and breathing heavily, he was covered in sweat, and he was wide-eyed, end quote. According to Wolf, Manny quote-unquote ran at officers at least once and also quote-unquote sprinted directly at officers at some point. Manny was tased and he dropped to the ground, but Wolf said that Manny recovered from the taser almost immediately, much like what Burbank and Collins claim happened on the night Manny died. A video from the 2019 incident, which was recorded by a bystander, was played for the jury. Wolf described the sounds Manny was making, aka what he called excited utterances, which were compared to the sounds Manny made on the night he died. Again, the goal of the defense presenting this evidence was to make comparisons between the incidents and assert that Manny acted a certain way while he was high on meth. On cross-examination, the state questioned Wolf about statements he made regarding Manny's behavior and demeanor that didn't make it into Wolf's incident report. For example, Wolf didn't mention that Manny was wide-eyed, nor did he document that he thought Manny was under the influence of a controlled substance. On cross-examination from Burbank's attorney, Wolf also admitted that he didn't include Manny charging at officers in his report, nor did he mention that he had his gun pointed at Manny, ready to fire. On recross by the state, Wolf admitted that despite the fact that Manny hadn't struck or punched officers, Wolf was ready to pull the trigger of his gun. Gabriel Bull, another Pierce County Sheriff's deputy, was called next. He was also involved in the 2019 incident. He testified that Manny told him he was on meth and lean. He also testified that he tased Manny twice during that encounter. On cross-examination by the prosecution, Bull admitted it wasn't clear from his report what the timeline of the taser shots was, but Bull was adamant that Manny continued to advance on officers, resulting in the need for a second shot. The next witness to testify was Cody Pollock, an emergency room technician at MultiCare. He described himself as the quote-unquote right-hand man to doctors and nurses in the emergency room. He treated Manny on the night of the 2019 incident for the extent of injuries that Manny suffered from the employees at the A&W restaurant. According to Pollock, Manny was given Ativan twice. Ativan is used as either a medical restraint or to help someone calm down. Pollock testified that Manny, quote, postured and clenched his fists at him, end quote, and felt like Manny was behaving aggressively toward him. He said he was able to, quote unquote, talk Manny down, but he also ordered additional medication for Manny. Pollock said the way Manny acted toward him was a, quote, step up from the normal aggressiveness, end quote. On cross-examination, the prosecution confirmed with Pollock that Manny was asleep when Pollock started cleaning out his wounds, which could explain Manny's reaction to him. On recross by the prosecution, Pollock confirmed that he doesn't prescribe medications, nor does he actually make the decision to administer medications for a patient. Rangan's next witness was Deputy Prosecuting Attorney Gregory Greer. Greer was the attorney who filed charges for Manny related to the 2019 incident. He was also in charge of setting the conditions of release for Manny. November 13th concluded with the testimony of Laura Fonda, a substance abuse counselor with Pierce County Alliance. She conducted the initial intake for Manny, noting his history of legal issues surrounding his substance abuse / regular meth use. On cross-examination, Fonda noted that Manny's treatment with Pierce County Alliance was voluntary. He hadn't been court-ordered to attend this treatment. Fonda testified that she believed Manny genuinely wanted to change and he had a stable living environment with his sister. The next day, five more witnesses testified. A social worker testified about Manny's mental health, Detective Sergeant Moss testified about the 2015 incident with Manny, and Deputy Sheriff Kevin Pressel testified about his involvement with Manny during the 2015 incident. Pressel testified that Manny's, quote, fast, repetitive speech, end quote, and Manny's behavior was indicative of meth use. Pressel said that Manny was kicking, flailing, and resisting with officers, and he was thrashing on the ground and kicked one of the deputies. Pressel also claimed that Manny was lifting officers off the ground. On cross-examination by the state, Pressel conceded that it only took one officer to put Manny in handcuffs during the 2015 incident. Pressel also conceded that Manny complied with being placed in handcuffs. Finally, Pressel said it took about a minute to restrain Manny during this incident. The next witness was called by Burbank's defense team. Shad Hayes was an eyewitness who was expected to undercut the testimony of the prosecution's eyewitnesses and bolster the defense's version of events. Instead, Hayes testified that Pierce County investigators attributed statements to him that he never made. And Hayes was adamant about this. He said he never told detectives that Manny appeared intoxicated or that he heard bystanders arguing. Hayes testified that Manny was resisting arrest, but he never struck, kicked, or otherwise threatened officers. Hayes didn't see Burbank and Collins struggling with Manny until Manny was face down on the pavement. And Hayes didn't see Manny actually stand up or strike any blows to the officers. All he saw was Burbank and Collins struggling to subdue Manny. Another eyewitness called by the defense was Kenneth Ashford White, the brother of prosecution eyewitness Ayanna White. Ashford White was staying in the same home as Ayanna White, so he was also there on the night Manny died. Ashford White testified that he was in the upstairs portion of the home when he heard screaming and saw lights from a cop car. He went outside and saw officers trying to restrain Manny, who he claimed was resisting. Ashford White said he watched the incident unfold off and on for about 30 to 40 minutes. He also testified that he heard Manny say he couldn't breathe. And although he didn't actually see the taser shots being fired, Ashford White testified that he heard 3 to 4 shots from a taser. On cross-examination, the state pointed out that a telephone pole was situated in front of the upstairs window of the White home, which obstructed Ashford White's view of the incident, at least initially. Ashford White also claimed that the Vivint doorbell camera was glitchy at picking up movements, meaning it was inconsistent in what it picked up to record. Ashford White said that he never saw Manny pick up or throw Burbank or Collins, and he never saw Manny standing up. He only saw Manny on his knees, down on the ground. Ashford White also said that he saw an officer on Manny's back pushing Manny into the ground, but he couldn't be sure who the officer was. On cross-examination by Collins' attorney, Ashford White said that he saw officers being quote-unquote manhandled by Manny and that Manny wasn't restrained until the third and fourth officers arrived on scene. On November 15th, the court spent a great deal of time outside the presence of the jury discussing several issues, including rallies outside the courtroom, a juror testing positive for COVID, and whether Manny's sister Monet could have an emotional support dog with her in the courtroom. After that lengthy discussion, Rankin's attorney called his partner, Messiah Ford, as their next witness. Ford and Rankin had only been partners for about 4 months prior to the night Manny died. Despite this, Ford testified that he and Rankin spent time together outside of work at potlucks and dog playdates. Ford also testified that Manny's mom, Marcia, had been his high school counselor and mentor. He testified that he didn't know Manny was her son on the night that Manny died. Ford said that both he and his family had received death threats as a result of the case, and that he sees a mental health professional on a regular basis because of this. He also claimed he has remained silent and hasn't been able to defend himself. But I should note, although Ford held one of Manny's legs, he was cleared of any wrongdoing by Tacoma PD's internal affairs investigation, and he wasn't charged in Manny's death. So I'm not sure what he needs to defend himself about, but I digress. Like the statement of his partner, Ford said that Manny was quote-unquote doing the worm and quote-unquote bucking across the road when Ford and Rankin came to the scene. According to Ford's testimony, he never saw Rankin do anything inappropriate. He also claimed that if he had, he would have intervened. Ford claimed that Manny wasn't talking, he was making quote-unquote grunting noises, which he described were like the noises made during physical exertion. Ford admitted on direct that he heard Manny say that he couldn't breathe one time while he was in the prone position. Just like his partner said in his recorded statement, Ford too claimed that Manny said this in a quote-unquote remarkably calm voice. Ford also testified that he knew Manny was breathing because he saw Manny's chest moving up and down. Ford claimed that Manny was immediately placed in the recovery position when he said he couldn't breathe. Ford testified that he told Manny to calm down and relax. He said it was very difficult to restrain Manny. Ford reiterated that he didn't see Rankin use any quote-unquote unreasonable tactics. Ford claimed that Manny was burning up and sweating profusely, so he thought it could have been an excited delirium event. According to Ford's testimony, he didn't see Rankin on Manny's back while he was being hobbled. Instead, he claimed that Rankin's knee was in the shoulder blade area. Ford also claimed that he couldn't see any pressure being applied by Rankin. Ford testified that he heard his sergeant make a call for medical assistance, so there was no need for him or other officers to also call for help. According to Ford, he still considered Manny a threat, even though Manny was hobbled before paramedics got there. On cross-examination by the prosecution, Ford conceded that there was almost never a circumstance where you would leave someone in a prone position. Ford also conceded that once Manny was handcuffed, all four officers could have picked Manny up off the ground and put him into a patrol car, but of course, they didn't do that. Ford admitted that he was trained in CPR and that priority aid should have been requested when Manny said that he couldn't breathe. Ford said that he didn't see Manny hit or kick Burbank, Collins, or Rankin. He said that Manny was flailing, but that wasn't necessarily kicking. He also confirmed that he didn't see any injuries on Burbank or Collins. When cross-examined by Burbank's attorneys, Ford said that officers are allowed to go outside their training if it's reasonable to do so under the circumstances. Collins' attorney was next to cross-examine Ford, and he got Ford to say that Collins, quote, treats citizens with respect, end quote. Ford claimed that he didn't see Collins use excessive force, and he also admitted that he socialized with Burbank and Collins outside of work and considered them friends, but he was quick to state that this didn't affect or influence his testimony in the case. On recross by the state, Ford confirmed that Manny didn't hit or threaten anyone while he was on scene, nor did he have any weapons. On recross by Burbank's attorney, Ford said that he considered Manny a physical threat, even though Manny hadn't made any verbal threats toward officers. A new witness was called by Rankin's defense on November 16th. Jennifer Stankus, an emergency physician, was called to rebut the state's medical experts regarding the cause of Manny's death. According to Dr. Stankus, Manny had a lot of drug-related visits and complaints of shortness of breath along with chest pains in his medical records. She also noted Manny's recurrent pericarditis, aka inflammation around the lining of the heart. She testified that this was likely the result of Manny's quote-unquote daily meth use. Dr. Stankus's testimony on direct examination was that Manny's cause of death wasn't due to a pulmonary issue such as positional asphyxia or hypoxia. Dr. Stankus believed Manny's death was a cardiac issue. She said there was no evidence of pulseless electric activity leading up to Manny's cardiac arrest. In fact, she claimed that Manny had a pulse for 5 to 6 minutes. Dr. Stankus testified that she considered whether positional asphyxia was a factor in Manny's death, but she disregarded this because if positional asphyxia had been the issue, she believed that emergency medical personnel would have been able to rescue Manny. Instead, according to Dr. Stankus, Manny continued to deteriorate rather than improve. Her ultimate cause of death was the toxic and lethal level of meth in Manny's system, plus his underlying heart disease. Dr. Stankus's cause of death fit perfectly within the defense's theory of the case. On cross-examination, the state got Dr. Stankus to admit that she was a contract physician, meaning that she isn't employed full-time at any medical facility. She also told prosecutors she spends approximately 10 to 30% of her time doing expert witness work, and another 5% of her time was devoted to her reality adventure show. Dr. Stankus conceded that she didn't perform an analysis of any tissue in the case, she wasn't board certified in cardiology, she didn't have any experience in forensic pathology, and she had never provided expert testimony regarding hypoxia or sudden cardiac arrest. Prosecutors also asked Dr. Stankus about statements she made saying that she was pro-law enforcement. Dr. Stankus said that she believes in law and order, which to her means quote-unquote fair appropriate treatment by law enforcement. However, the prosecution made it clear that Dr. Stankus had a history as a law enforcement officer and she has family members in the field. When asked about the heart monitor data, Dr. Stankus told the prosecution that hypoxia doesn't cause the up and down movements she saw in the records. She claimed that Manny's heart rhythm on the monitor was all over the place and that Manny had a quote-unquote sick heart. She claimed that Manny was, quote, in trouble medically from the outset, end quote. Again, these opinions were coming from someone who specializes in emergency medicine, not cardiology issues. Dr. Stankus claimed that Manny still had a pulse when paramedics arrived and he had shallow breathing. If Manny had a respiratory issue, paramedics should have been able to save him. Manny was bagged for 5 to 6 minutes, but his condition didn't improve. Again, this is according to Dr. Stankus. Dr. Stankus also boldly claimed that Manny would have died that night regardless of his interaction with law enforcement. The basis of this opinion was Manny's prior encounters with police, along with his medical records, even though Dr. Stankus had never personally treated Manny and only knew the law enforcement information because of the records she was provided with by the defense. Dr. Stankus admitted during cross-examination that she read the accounts of Burbank, Collins, and Rankin, but not any of the other officers on scene. She also said that those three men would be the only ones in close enough contact with Manny to see that he was quote-unquote sweating profusely. Dr. Stankus claimed that the eyewitness statements about Manny's behavior were inconsistent with someone who was on a toxic dose of meth, but she didn't elaborate any further on how that was the case. The final witness called for the week was a use of force expert, Chris Nielsen. Nielsen is a training sergeant for the city of Renton. He's also a licensed attorney and owns a consulting business regarding police practices. Nielsen testified about progressions of force and broadly stated that the officers in this case used the quote-unquote appropriate amount of force against Manny. He explained that when there are variations or inconsistencies between statements of those involved, he uses objective evidence to reconcile those conflicting statements. He also discussed the Graham factors, which were initially introduced by the prosecution's use of force expert, John Ryan. Nielsen testified that, quote, by nature, use of force events involve police using a disproportionate level of force on the subject, end quote, when there is resistance to overcome. Court was canceled for the week of Thanksgiving due to another juror testing positive for COVID. All three officers are expected to testify before the defense rests their cases. Trial resumes on November 27th. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Please subscribe and leave a review if you like the show. You can email case suggestions or comments to truecrimecatlawyer@gmail.com. The links for our social media pages are included in the show notes. And if you want more content, head over to Patreon to join one of our available tiers. Finally, if you're interested in learning more about my co-host, you can check out her Instagram at WinstonTheCatPDX. Thanks again for listening and stay tuned for our next episode.